Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC New York Public Radio, this is The Brian Lehrer Show. I'm Brian Lehrer. This is just one segment of our show, but every interview is available on demand at WNYC.org. This on-demand service is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org.
WNYC On Demand is supported by Open, how American Express serves small business. Open offers a range of products and services designed exclusively for small business. Details at 888-779-OPEN or open.com.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and we've all heard the African proverb that it takes a village to raise a child. But our next guest takes that proverb and kind of turns it on its head. Kia Ingenlath wants to have a child or a group of children raise a village, and she is actively working to develop communities in the province of Cusco in Peru. Originally from the United States, Ingenlath has spent the last 10 years of her life in Peru establishing a children's home and a yoga retreat, and she joins me today to talk about her very interesting life and work. Kia, welcome to WNYC. Hello.
Thank you, Brian.
Tell me about Casa de los Milagros, which means House of Miracles. What is it?
Casa de Milagros is more, I don't like to call it an orphanage, I like to call it a home because it is a family setting. We have 30 children, we have boys and girls that range in age from 2 years to 17 years. And we also are very active in the community. We have a soup kitchen that feeds 97 children and 20 elderly people every day. Our home is... All of our children are orphans. They have no parents, no mother, no father. Most of the children don't have very many relatives. If they do, the poverty is so great in Peru that the people really can't take care of children that aren't their own. Most of our children came to us from mountain villages where in Peru they don't have a social service system. So a lot of the children were, when their parents died, were passed from house to house through the village. And in this process of being passed around, a lot of them had been emotionally, physically, or sexually abused. We, at our home, we are a nonviolent household. That means there's no hitting. People come to our house and they go, "Your kids never fight." And I'm like, "Well, no." It's a nonviolent household. It took a few years to get to that point. But also in verbally nonviolent also.
How do you reinforce that since kids tend to fight once in a while and need to be broken up?
It's amazing that it happens very rarely in our home. But when the children first came, a lot of the children that had been physically abused, the only thing they knew to do when they would get excited would be to hit. And I would have to stop everything, sit down with the children, and talk about what violence was and that it was a nonviolent home and that we didn't need to hit there. And it took several years to get that point across, but now it's really amazing how little arguing or fighting that goes on inside our home.
And what's the relationship between this orphanage and the community development work for the larger area in that part of Peru known as the Sacred Valley?
You're
trying to use the orphanage, as I understand it, not just to raise the children, but also to help develop the local community in a broader way. Is that correct?
That's right. Yes, we have organic gardens where we are teaching the local people how to grow organically because most of their crops are just corn and potatoes. And so now we have these beautiful gardens where people come and it's an example. We're actually setting an example for the people. We also are bringing back the natural crafts. All of our children know how to spin yarn, know how to dye it with plant dyes. We also are teaching different talleres of how to learn how to do certain things. And the children from the community are allowed to come and join us for that.
We found out about your work from a colleague who calls you a visionary. Would you use that word to describe yourself?
Yes, I would.
What does that mean?
Well, When I first went to Peru and I saw that there was such a need, I just had this vision of making a children's community, more like a community for children. And I went there with nothing, and the manifestation just more or less happened. I saw it already manifest when I went there. We re-renovated a 200-year-old hacienda that was basically a ruin. And I saw it already done when I looked at it. I was like, oh, yeah, this is beautiful. And my friends are going, you are crazy. It's a ruin. And we completely rebuilt it. And now it's this beautiful home for children.
Is that visionary in some spiritual or mystical sense? Or is that just creativity and imagination?
I think it's creativity, imagination, and in a spiritual sense, it has a lot to do with faith.
What kind of faith?
Faith in the fact that you can do whatever you set your mind to do. And, you know, I guess it has to do with faith in God, faith in the universe, however you want to call it. But in the big picture, it just had to do with having enough faith that you can manifest something in your life without even knowing how you're going to get the resources to do it.
I guess in theory, you could have chosen to set up a home for orphan children anywhere in the world, but you chose Peru and the Cusco region. How come?
Because I was there. I went there as a journey to see Machu Picchu. And I saw that there was a need, and I spoke Spanish because I had lived in Costa Rica. So that kind of helped me along the way, was that I could speak the language. Even though in the area where we live with all indigenous people, and they actually speak Spanish and Quechua, which is the native tongue of the indigenous people there.
We're speaking with Kia Inginlath. Did I say your name right there?
Inginlath.
Here on WNYC, who has set up an orphanage. She prefers to call it a home for orphan children in the Cusco region of Peru, where the idea is to raise the children, not to find them adoptive parents. Is that more common in Peru for an orphan's home than it might be here?
Well, they make adoption so hard that, you know, your average person can't just walk into a country and adopt a child unless you have $50,000 or $60,000 and you meet all the criteria. So when I set it up, we set it up for the life of the child rather than just as a transient thing, because the chances, we asked, they have a thing called the Moody's, which is for the promotion for women and children. And there's maybe 200 children adopted out of Peru in 1 year. So, and there's so many children that are orphaned and that need help and that are malnourished and ill. And so we just decided, well, we better do it for the life of the child.
Yeah. You talked about how hard it is to achieve an adoption. What are some of the biggest barriers?
Money. Meeting the criteria, because you have to meet American criteria if you adopt out of Peru. And so, you know, unless you're, if you have a very good income and have $50,000 in the bank, well, then you can adopt a child. And they do that for child protection laws, I'm sure. But at the same time, there's a lot of loving people that don't have $50,000. And so it may make it really hard to adopt.
What's the community surrounding your home like?
Okay, the community around my home is mud houses. They're made out of adobe. Most of the people have dirt floors. They have their little guinea pigs or cuis running around on the floor eating the scraps, which is they eat guinea pigs in Peru. That's a delicacy. So almost everybody has them in their kitchen. They cook on wood. Some of the people have electricity in our little community. But basically, the average income of the people that live on either side of us is about $300 a year. And they are very, very poor people. Some people have no money at all. They grow corn and potatoes. A lot of times they don't eat vegetables. Most of the children are malnourished. Most of the, they hardly have clothes or shoes. We try to supply that when I bring back donations. Whatever we don't use at our home, we give out to the community.
When did you decide to lend yourself to service? Have you always felt a sense of service?
Well, kind of, yeah. My parents were missionaries. And so my parents did a life of service. And when I turned 50, I actually did a midlife ceremony and dedicated the second half of my life to service. Not that I didn't do service before, but I have more time now that my family has grown up. I have 6 children of my own and 8 grandchildren.
So. Wow. What did you do before?
I ran a yoga retreat center in Costa Rica.
And you run a yoga retreat center there in Peru as well, I understand.
Yes, we just opened our Hanak Pacha, where the heaven meets the earth. And it's part of of our project. I created the center for the children because there are really not very many jobs where we live in the area in the Sacred Valley. So as the children get older, they can work at the center. Plus, any profits from the center will go to support the children at home at Casa de Milagros.
Do you teach yoga to kids?
I do.
Do they like it? Actually, I have a third grader who they give yoga to sometimes in school, and he hates it because he has to stay so still.
Well, we kind of do active yoga with the kids. You know, there's animal positions, and you can be a lion, and you can be a snake, and we try to make it fun because kids get kind of bored with any kind of regular routine. But our kids can sit in silence pretty well, more than most kids that I've ever seen.
How has the community in the area accepted you and the fact that you set up this children's home from the outside?
It was very difficult the first couple of years that we were there. I was the first outsider that they let in to their community. And we did this beautiful thing. We fixed up this beautiful old hacienda. And then they kind of wanted to take it back and make it into a hotel after I fixed it up. But we got through that. And when I started delivering the babies, I deliver babies. I'm a midwife and a registered nurse. And I do deliver the babies for the communities. My daughter, Marie, is also a midwife, and she's studying. So when we started delivering people's babies, that's a pretty intimate thing to do with people, and that kind of gave us the in more, and that and doing the medical care when people had sick children, they could bring them to us. So that after doing that for several years, then now we're really well loved, and since we opened the soup kitchen and we're feeding so many children, also they're really happy that we're there.
How much is religion a part of the children's lives? I assume the surrounding villagers are mostly Catholic.
They are mostly Catholic. I don't know that they go to church, but there's like festivals of all kinds of virgins all the time, and so they do celebrate those holidays, the Virgin of Carmen and things. Our children are raised not particularly Catholic. They can make that decision. We have 2 children that go out and go to Catholic church because they decided they wanted to be Catholic. I basically teach the children that all religions there's no religion that's bad. Worship is worship, and there's, you know, no bad way to worship, and that a lot of religion is cultural. And so I teach them that different cultures have different religions, and we kind of study a little bit of all the religions.
How were you raised?
I was raised a Seventh-day Adventist. I was raised as a Christian.
Somebody told me you were an orphan yourself.
Yes, my parents died when I was 12, and my brother also. I lost my whole family in 1 year. My brother was killed in an accident. My father died the day we buried my brother.
Oh, my.
He had a cerebral hemorrhage of the brain, and then my mother died 4 months later of breast cancer metastasized to her brain. So I know what it's like to lose your family.
And you were living as a missionary family in Trinidad at that time, is that right?
We had come back to the United States. Uh-huh. We had only been back maybe a year when my family died.
Where does your drive come from? You've taken a lot of responsibility on. It must take a lot of energy. The orphanage with 30 kids and not much of a staff, a yoga center, your midwife work, your gardening.
It's just my life. When you're living your life and you love what you do, then it doesn't seem like it's too much. I love what I do. I never have a day that I don't love what I'm doing.
You obviously love what you're doing and have a passion. Do you see yourself staying in Peru, or do you want to create similar projects elsewhere, perhaps?
Well, I would like this project that we're doing, Casa de Milagros, to be a model for other homes that could be developed. Also, I have this dream of making some children's communities where, like in India and Africa, where you could start out with 100 children and actually make a child's community with a school and a medical center. And I actually made a whole plan for that. And I would still consider Peru my home and the children my children. But that doesn't mean that I can't go and help implement other children's homes or children's communities.
I gather you have a relatively small staff. How do you take care of 30 children? Do you use special parenting skills to keep the kids on track? Have you studied that?
Well, being a single mom with six children of my own, I was kind
you
of
have some
studying.
Experience.
Yeah. It's easy. My daughter Marie and my son-in-law Alan are there because this project is also in memory of my grandson who I lost 8 or 9 years ago. And so his parents are there, and he has three siblings that were born after his after he passed. And they were actually born in Casa de Milagros. I delivered my grandchildren, so that was really nice. We are pretty close-knit family. For discipline, like if kids have an altercation with each other, they have to eat off the same plate for a week. And so at the end...
you make them share and bond. And
At the end of the week, they're not mad at each other anymore.
Kia Ingenlath has spent the last 10 years of her life in the Cusco region of Peru, establishing a children's home and a yoga retreat. It's been fascinating and inspiring to meet you. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.
And today on the Leonard Lopate Show, Martha Henry, a psychologist from the Center for Adoption Research, will join Leonard and talk about her sister-in-law, who's an adoptee from Korea, now living in Boston, on the psychology of international adoption. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Thanks for listening to The Brian Lehrer Show from WNYC New York Public Radio. You can hear everything we do and check out our other programs on demand at WNYC.org or on iTunes. This on-demand service is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org. And thanks.